On Wednesday, January 18th, the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency, Administration executed what's called a federal inspection warrant on the Cadott Medical Center and its sole practitioner, 83-year-old Dr. Clifford T. Bovee. While the feds have stayed pretty quiet about what they were looking for or what they found, further digging on WPR's part revealed that it all surrounded the prescription of opioid pain medications like oxycodone, OxyContin, methadone, and Suboxone. The raid on the clinic and the fates of around 200 patients is part of a major shift in how opioid medications are prescribed and pain is treated in the U.S. This hour, we're going to talk about the raid briefly, the clinic, the doctor, the status of pain and addiction treatment in Wisconsin, and much more. This is The West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. I wanted to let our listeners know that you can call in with your thoughts on this discussion, whether you were a patient of Dr. Bovee's or you were a concerned citizen in the community near Cadott. Let us know. Or if you're just interested in the whole discussion about how to treat pain and addiction. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. Our guests this hour. First, Andy Falk is a sergeant with the Eau Claire Police Department and is a supervisor with the West Central Drug Task Force. Andy Falk, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rich.
Dr. Brendan Parkhurst joins us by phone. He is the medical director of patient experience at the Marshfield Clinic. Dr. Parkhurst, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Rich.
Good to have you on. And joining us from our studios in Madison is Dr. Alaa Abdel Saeed, who is gracious enough to let me call him Dr. Al for the rest of the hour so I don't butcher his name any further. Dr. Al is the medical director of the University of Wisconsin Pain Clinic in Madison. Dr. Al, welcome to the West Side.
Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. Listeners, if you have a question or comment, give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. It's a big discussion. It's a complicated discussion. Pain management, addiction treatment in the face of an opioid epidemic. We're going to talk about how there was a shift from prescribing pills like OxyContin, and now we're shifting away from it and looking for new options and testing new options currently all over the state to treat chronic pain. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. If you were a patient of the Cadott Medical Center, we'd love to hear from you. If you were a concerned citizen in the area that had worries that this was a pill mill, let us know. 800-228-5615. You can also post on the West Side Facebook page. So first of all, Andy Falk, I talked a little bit about the raid itself. Did the drug task force have anything to do with this or did members of the task force hear any concerns about this maybe being a source for pain medications that were being used incorrectly?
We have received information about Dr. Bovee's activities over the course of a number of years. Being a medical facility, it's hard for us to tell in law enforcement exactly whether or not what he was doing was legal or not legal. We have investigated him in the past, attempting to obtain narcotics from his practice through the use of undercover individuals, and have had some limited success in dealing with him in that regard at previous times. When we had investigated him previously, he took the position of not really understanding that folks were coming to him to get narcotic medications and were abusing them. He felt that he was just helping individuals and kind of claimed some level of ignorance as to what they were doing with the pills from that point. I know that information has gone to different law enforcement groups throughout the state and obviously the DEA based on their recent efforts with him. And they had conducted the inspection that they did, and I believe their investigation into what he's been involved in continues from here, and that's probably why they're not disclosing a lot of information on it now.
Absolutely. Still ongoing. I did check. There's a federal court search that you can do, kind of like Wisconsin's CCAP, and no charges have been filed. In fact, Dr. Bovey and some of the staff at the clinic told me that the DEA said that there wouldn't be any charges filed, but of course we can't know that until the investigation is concluded. So I guess, was there any proof or I mean, you were investigating. Was there any proof that this was a source maybe for people who were selling drugs? Because that was one of the concerns that came up as I was interviewing people in the community about the Cadott Medical Center.
Well, what we would receive in terms of information from people in the public would be, say, tip line information, people calling us and leaving, you know, voicemails and, you know, not leaving us names or very specific information about what Dr. Bovey was involved in. From a law enforcement standpoint or even from a prosecutorial standpoint, you know, tip information is helpful in directing our investigations, but it doesn't prove cases.
Right.
So, you know, what we need to show or prove from the law enforcement side is that Dr. Bovey was knowingly, you know, committing crimes and distributing narcotic medications to individuals who did not need them. Now, I'm sure you can imagine there's a lot of gray area there when you talk about the word need and whether or not people actually needed them or the stories that they came in and gave the doctor and, you know, how he felt about prescribing the medications that he did. A lot of times the information or complaints about him would come from family members of individuals that were receiving pills from him or other associated people calling. The people seeking the drugs themselves were typically not the caller because they saw him as the source for, you know, the medications that they were seeking.
Mm-hmm. And when it comes to what you investigate with the drug task force here in the Eau Claire, Chippewa Valley region, how far up the ladder does opioid pain medications, do they go? I mean, because we keep hearing, I remember a few years ago, the discussion was all about heroin. We were seeing heroin pop up, especially in River Falls, but around the Chippewa Valley as well. Now it's more on to methamphetamine. It seems like that's coming back. Where do these pills rank?
Well, pills, and I don't want to get too technical in terms of the chemistry and the medical profession side of it, but I'll venture out into it a little bit and saying that opioid medications, several of them mimic the effects of heroin fairly closely. And individuals that abuse or are addicted to narcotic medications such as OxyContin or oxycodone or Vicodin or several other narcotics can obtain a certain level of euphoria or a high from a pill and abusing that or how they choose to ingest it as they can from heroin itself. So the various pain medications that exist in the world are fairly interchangeable with heroin, and if there is a more direct access to the pills through a family's medicine cabinet or a doctor who will prescribe them out more freely, it's easier, and some people feel it's safer to abuse those prescription medications rather than heroin that is bought on the street, mm-hmm. where they don't know the level of purity or what exactly has gone into it or things like that.
Right. And, of course, Dr. Bovey, and I've got some clips from an interview that I did with him the day after, 2 days after, the clinic was basically visited by these DEA agents, and Dr. Bovey ceased his practice at that point. He mentioned that this was safer than people. He mentioned that he was helping people get off of street drugs, Dr. Al, I'd like to go to you now. A lot of these patients, he said, were heroin users, and he was able to prescribe them with Suboxone or methadone, something that was controlled. He would do urinary analysis to make sure that the patients weren't using other drugs or were actually using the drugs that they were prescribed. So are these drugs, even if they're prescribed at higher levels, are they safer than someone buying stuff off the street?
So that's a good question. Many of the opioids actually are similar to the street drugs. Some of them are actually metabolites of heroin. That's how close they are. So they carry similar addiction risk. Speaking of Suboxone, is a different medication, though, because it's what we call agonist-antagonist, and it is used by addiction medicine specialists to help people get off their addiction. But it is done in the setting of a multidisciplinary approach, so it's not only Suboxone, but those patients who have history of addiction or actively addicting get into also programs and groups and other things to help them get off their medications, as well as maybe giving them Suboxone to help them with the pharmacological part of getting off drugs. And it has to be done with a plan in mind about how long we're going to do the medication and how we're going to monitor those patients. Are they going to be in rehab facility, or we allow them to go home and do it at their living home? So there's a lot of things to do other than just prescribing a medication for addiction.
Right. So, but at all times, I guess there has to be an endpoint in mind. Is that, am I reading that right?
Correct. If we're doing it for the sake of addiction, then once addiction is clear, then the Suboxone need to be weaned down. I mean, everything needs to be because Suboxone has an addiction risk as well.
With that, we've got a lot of phone calls coming in. I thought we might for this program because it was a big issue in the Cadott area. But right now we're going to hear from Amy, and she says she's a health professional that worked with Dr. Bovee. So, Amy, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Hi. I didn't work directly with Dr. Bovee, but I worked in his area.
Okay.
And was extremely well-known as long as 10, 15 years ago as being the candy man. He was working in addiction medicine at the time, and he was extremely liberal in handing out opioids and benzodiazepines to the point where other providers were kind of, well, he's the addiction specialist, I guess. It's been known for a very long time in the area that he was the guy to go to if you wanted something.
All right. Well, thank you for that call and a reminder to other people that are listening and may have been affected or touched by this story with the Cadott Medical Center, the raid, et cetera. Let us know, 800-228-5615. If you prefer to be anonymous, we can make that happen. 1-800-228-5615. Dr. Parkhurst of the Marshfield Clinic, I'm wondering at what point, because a doctor's mission is to treat patients and a doctor's mission is to relieve their pain, is it not? At what point does it become a problem?
So again, I think that's a great question, Rich. And to get back to a little bit to the previous question, even the idea of safety, I think it's important to recognize that prescription medications, as well as drugs of abuse like heroin, which, again, they are very close relatives, the safety really doesn't come from the medication itself, but the safety comes from the actual act of monitoring and selecting the patients and, through the mechanism of how you're providing that care. So safety really isn't in the drug itself, but safety is in the process and the structure with regard to how you're treating the patient. And so I think that's where the key in this is. Pain can be treated, and pain can be treated with very high-risk medications, but it must be done safely. And at Marshfield Clinic, we have several mechanisms and constraints in place such that we try to provide that treatment safely.
And we'll get into that in just a bit, but I wanted to play a clip from Dr. Bovee himself because obviously he's not a guest on the program. After my initial conversation with him, I wasn't able to reach him. But this is what he told me, and he was talking about high-risk patients and that his was a pool of high-risk patients that caused him to become a bit of a target. So here's Dr. Clifford Bovee of the Cadott Medical Center.
Many of my patients have chronic pain, and they have high opioid tolerance, which is poorly understood in the pain-relieving field. There's common denominators issuing from pain clinics that you should only allow to give so much pain medicine to any one patient.
Mm-hmm.
From my perspective and from the addiction perspective and from the perspective of opioid tolerance, there's a lot of people that require more than the average pain medication in order to relieve their pain. And so many of my patients were refused elsewhere and were not given adequate amounts to relieve their pain. So they came to me, and I would gradually titrate them up. I'd run some blood tests to be sure that their blood levels weren't too high. And I would prescribe them and get them comfortable. And I've had a really low risk of overdose and in this population, and have had a degree of success, and the people are happy. But on paper, that does not look good if somebody reviews your record and you're giving twice as much morphine to one patient as you are to the next patient. But as I said, many of these patients get relief without toxicity. Cure them for addiction and toxicity.
Right.
From the addiction perspective, addiction is synonymous with loss of control of drugs, where a person goes to one doctor, he doesn't get enough or he wants more, and then he'll go elsewhere to another doctor and will wind up using more than buying off the street. That's loss of control, and that's addiction.
Mm-hmm.
My other practice was a Suboxone clinic, in which I give Suboxone, which is a long-acting opioid that is indicated or suggested by the government to give to patients that have a high opioid tolerance, have a hard time staying sober. And so I've had close to 100 patients on Suboxone. And many of these, a significant number of these, and actually my favorite patient is the heroin patient who's having a terrible time. Suboxone would work real well with them, and they'd be able to function and lead a normal life without craving and without addictive manifestations.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a combination.
Well, with that, I wanted to go back to Dr. Al. First of all, is it Dr. Bovey mentioned that treating people with high tolerances for opioids or opioid tolerances is not well understood in the pain medicine field? Do you agree with that?
So that might be the case in the past, where there were like some weak literature suggested use of high dose opioids, but all the new literature actually is against this. When we talk about opioids and high-dose opioids, we have to consider multiple things. First one, did we try other things and they didn't work? Because there are other medications that have a higher safety profile and actually more studies to help with pain than opioids. And second thing, when we go to opioids, we know that the patient for sure will develop tolerance to opioids. It's the nature of the drug and the body we treat. When you develop tolerance, actually, the question is you keep going higher on the dose to achieve like the pain control because the body got used of the medication. But at this point, there is actually decrease in efficacy as well. And that's when we consider what's called opioid rotation, shift to new drugs, or give what's called opioids holiday, kind of clears the system for a while from opioids. So there is a lot of science behind this. But the issue of you develop tolerance, you keep going higher, I think it's an old concept that doesn't apply to today's practice. And it can be associated with several side effects, and including the side effects of opioids like the nausea, vomiting, being sleepy and drowsy. And some of those actually do not get affected by the tolerance, but some do, which means if as you go higher on the dose, some of those side effects may not happen, but some of them will happen as you go higher.
And you mentioned you mentioned that this used to be the way, or that was kind of the old understanding. How long ago are we talking?
We're talking maybe like 2-3 decades ago. Mm. Although the practice in some states that didn't go to those new guidelines continued to happen until a few years ago. But there has been like literature in the past, I would say, 10 years that show that opioids has side effects, and all the talking about let us try other alternatives, try other medications.
In the last 10 years, and even in the last 2 years, we'll get into that a little bit more about the big shift and this new recommendations by CDC. First, let's take a break. We've got Chuck on the line. He was a former patient of Dr. Bovee's. We'll get to you in 1 minute. Chuck, hang tight. We want to hear from you. This is the West Side. I'm joined by Dr. Al of the University of Wisconsin Pain Clinic in Madison, Dr. Brandon Parkhurst of the Marshfield Clinic, and Andy Falk of the West Central Drug Task Force. 800-228-5615 if you'd like to join the conversation.
Support for WPR comes from Sitka Salmon Shares, an Alaskan community-supported fishery with Wisconsin roots, offering sustainable Alaskan seafood from its family of fishermen. Details and delivery info at sitkasalmonshares.com. Catch the latest news headlines, listen to our live streams, and browse the archives of your favorite shows, all from your tablet or smartphone. The best of WPR and NPR whenever and wherever you want it. WPR.org.
This is the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. We're talking about a DEA raid at the Kadot Medical Center in the small city of Kadot, just to the east of Eau Claire. This case is kind of underscoring the larger discussion about opioid pain medications, addiction, abuse, and treatment of pain and addiction. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call in. We've got three guests on, including Andy Falk of the West Central Drug Task Force, Dr. Brandon Parkhurst of the Marshfield Clinic Patient Experience. He's the medical director of patient experience there. Dr. Alaa Abdel Saeed is the medical director of the University of Wisconsin Pain Clinic in Madison. Right now, we're going to go to the phones. Chuck, are you still there?
Yeah.
Chuck is a former patient of Dr. Bovee's. Chuck, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Well, I'd like to just make a comment to the first, the task force guy there.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, we hear you.
Yeah. He said, you know, because of doing this to Dr. Bovee, I've been a patient of Dr. Bovee's for years. He's helped me tremendously. I'm not addicted, and I took them the way I was prescribed. I never sold them, never done nothing with them. But the thing is here, does he realize how many meth labs there are in our area? Does he realize how many heroin dealers there are?
You know, we work on those different issues a lot of the time. And actually, in our area, methamphetamine certainly represents the larger challenge for the public and the community from a drug perspective. There are heroin dealers in our area selling heroin, as well as individuals that are selling opioid medications for abuse purposes.
I wish I could find them.
We certainly do appreciate the the concern about methamphetamine in our area, and I would say we do spend the vast majority of our time working on investigations involving methamphetamine. And that is not to diminish the importance of working on opioid cases, because we do see them as a significant problem and it's an incredibly dangerous drug. But in its entirety, methamphetamine certainly does represent the biggest challenge in our area, and we address those problems accordingly.
Go ahead, Chuck.
Do you really see, you know, this is an old doctor. He's old school. He's been from, you know, wait. Do you look at things like that? He believes in the old-fashioned way. I'm sure he had a lot of patients that abused it and took him, you know.
Does that come into your mind when you're doing these investigations, Andy Falk?
Yeah. You know, I believe that Dr. Bovee, at some level, was taken advantage of by individuals because of that very fact that he is, say, old school, or maybe had a certain level of caring for individuals and wanting to help individuals out. maybe somewhat naive in the methods and the just the way that younger people that are abusing drugs today go about obtaining drugs. We work with individuals that are involved in pill diversion or obtaining narcotics of different types for abuse purposes, and they can be incredibly convincing and very good liars, and their stories that they give doctors are incredibly well thought out. And it would not be difficult for a doctor, and certainly one that is more, say, old school, to use your term, to be taken advantage of by these individuals. The problem that we see with Dr. Bovey was this wasn't a one-time incident. There is a track record of him being involved in this activity for a number of years, and that's what really represented the problem with him.
And, Chuck, I wanted to ask you, since Dr. Bovey's office was closed, how have you been, because I know that you were burned very badly and you had the scars to prove it. How have you been managing your pain?
Alcohol.
Yeah?
That's all I have, and I'll tell you, my life, you know, I've watched since then. I've literally watched my life going away from me, you know.
Mm.
I've had chickens. I run a farm. I can't run that. Everything's gone. Because I suffer in pain every day. And I'm tired of hearing, opiate this, opiate that. Well, that's fine if you're a druggie. But I truly use it to help me get through my day, you know, to get my things done that I need to do.
Have you been able to find another doctor to prescribe something for your pain?
Well, I found a doctor that gives me lidocaine patches, which don't stick, and they don't do anything anyways.
Hmm.
They do nothing. I don't know what they even are.
Well, Chuck, best of luck to you. Thanks for calling in. I appreciate you sharing your story. Dr. Parkhurst, I'd like to go to you now. I know that Marshfield Clinic must have dealt with some of these patients coming from Dr. Bovey's office. I'm just wondering what that process is like, and how do you tell somebody that, you know, says that they're in pain like this, that they can't have these opioids?
Well, so I think, Rich, it's not so much about can or can't,
mm-hmm.
as much as, you know, a physician-patient relationship is really about working together collaboratively to try to achieve, you know, the reduction of suffering, to try to achieve the reduction of symptoms that a person is experiencing. And what I tell the providers that I sort of work with in our area is, we expect you to see these patients. We expect you to provide, you know, high quality medical recommendations and to work with them collaboratively to provide the best medical care possible. And in that context, it's not about prescribing opioids or not prescribing opioids, but looking objectively at what the evidence is, behind best medical practice and trying to approach the problem to reduce the suffering. Chuck, as he clearly pointed out, and as you pointed out, I mean, I don't doubt for any minute that Chuck suffers pain. But I also don't doubt that there are ways to reduce that pain that are out there, and maybe some of them may well be safer than opioids.
Has the discussion, Dr. L, has the discussion changed at all about, instead of treating pain or trying to eliminate pain, to just managing and learning to live with pain?
So the new trend in pain management is, as I mentioned, what's called multidisciplinary pain management, which means it's not only counting on medications. So medications are just part of the program we use to treat our patients. For example, in our clinic, we have pain psychologists, we have an addiction counselor, we have a psychiatrist, we have physical therapy, We have integrated medicine, and then we have procedures and we have medications. And when we come to each of those, there are multiple subgroups of things that can be done. So counting on medications only, I don't think that's what it should be done. But again, we should find what the patient needs, because the patient might need one or more of what I just mentioned. Some patients will need just pain psychology. Some patients will need only interventions. And some patients will need a combination of all. And this all has to be done with a well-qualified and trained team with good communication to make sure that what we do is adding up to help the patient. And then we have to determine goals with the patient as well, because we can't just do what we want to do without involving the patient. The patient is actually the head of the team. And we have to inform the patient what we think we should do, what we should recommend, and what we believe is the best way to go, and then get their opinion and get their goals and try to tell them, you know, we have to have timelines for things and goals and make sure the patient is improving, check every now and then that the patient is improving, because otherwise it gives in a circle, like you keep giving medication, then you have to deal down the road with consequences, side effects, while the problem might have needed more than medications. And we see patients like Chuck, which I have no doubt that Chuck is in pain, and he needs this pain to be under control. But what I have heard from Chuck is that he got only opioids, and that was a way to treat his pain. Maybe he just needed more than this. He needed to do physical therapy and be in this kind of multidisciplinary setting where a team is working on his management more than just an individual provider.
I'd like to go back to the phones. The caller's been waiting for a while now. Melinda from Elk Mound, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. I really appreciate the program and definitely understand that this is a very multifaceted problem in our community. I just wanted to bring up a couple of points. I'm part of the healthcare community, and you know, there's a number of things out there that are contradictory to assisting these people with opioid abuse. And part of that is, you know, we have different kinds of standards for patient satisfaction, which, you know, you want the patients to be satisfied, which also affects our reimbursement. And sometimes in places like emergency rooms and such, you know, you give out medications or pain medications more easily because you want patients to be satisfied. And that's part of an issue in itself. But also, I think that there's been, one of your guests talked a little bit earlier about law enforcement not really being able to make that determination about what's medically necessary and what isn't. And I guess a larger discussion on this is, you know, how our healthcare community actually tries to promote health and protect people against this kind of abuse. And specifically, I guess I'm wondering, I might ask the law enforcement person, you know, this Dr. Bovey practiced at HSHS St. Joe's and Sacred Heart for years and years and years at L.A. Phillips and had multiple investigations. And here we have a healthcare organization, a very large healthcare organization in our community that, you know, just let him slip away to be able to practice elsewhere rather than, you know, stopping this kind of abuse. And I guess I understand, you know, the old school discussion because, you know, he is an older gentleman, et cetera. But feigning ignorance and not being up to date on current practices is really detrimental. And when other healthcare providers recognize this, it's important for us to police ourselves as well. So I guess I just wanted to put that out there. It is, you know, there are a lot of contradictions in people being able to achieve relief from opioid abuse and for us to practice appropriately, I guess.
Melinda, thank you so much for your thoughts. Andy Falk, response?
Yeah. You know, we recognize, as I had stated earlier, you know, Dr. Bovey has been in the area for a number of years, and we are familiar with it. He's worked for different medical facilities. And
he was the director of the treatment center for a while.
And the difficulty that we have in law enforcement is simply that we're law enforcement officers, and our level of training and knowledge and understanding of what a medical professional is doing is somewhat limited. And here again, as been discussed, we have a difficult time sort of it's it's somewhat kind of a moving target in terms of, you know, what is appropriate distribution or prescription of different medications for different individuals, what is appropriate from a medical provider standpoint. We can receive complaints and we can hear from medical professionals that what he's doing is inappropriate or illegal based on that. But for us to be able to construct a criminal investigation that proves that he's being, you know, knowingly criminal in his behavior and have a prosecutor be able to move forward with that case through the court system was a challenging thing for law enforcement. And, you know, so we accept some responsibility for what's been occurring with him over the years, but it is really a situation that's difficult with our level of understanding in this. And we would rely upon, you know, some information or advice or help from medical professionals in the area to help us move forward with a criminal case if that's what was appropriate, because, you know, those folks are really the ones that understand the nuts and bolts of what he's doing, whether it's right or it's wrong.
I'll chime in there too. Dr. Bovee was reprimanded by the Wisconsin State Medical Examining Board twice, and the way I understand it, he's under investigation. There's three more investigations that this board is doing against him. But that was a lot of people felt very frustrated that that he seemed to kind of slip through the cracks, and even the board reprimanded him, but he was still allowed to practice and prescribe these medications. Dr. Parkhurst, I wanted to go to you because Melinda mentioned Medicaid reimbursement and the contradictions. So can you explain what she's talking about? I mean, because it wasn't that long ago that prescribing opioids or doctors were encouraged to treat pain and not let pain go untreated, correct?
So that is correct, Rich, and absolutely I can address some of Linda's concerns. What Linda's referring to is reimbursement that has occurred to hospitals historically based upon patient experience surveys that included pain and specifically control of pain in a hospitalization or in a hospital setting as part of that reimbursement formula. First, know that Medicare actually removed that as part of the reimbursement formula for at the beginning of calendar year 2017. So while that question still exists on the survey, it's actually not part of the compensation formula or the reimbursement formula. I think it's also important to recognize that the question under no way implied or stated that pain needed to be treated in that acute setting with opioids. So I think that's important to separate.
Right.
I think the bigger thing that she gets to, though, is this, that her comment gets to, is this notion from providers, or at least I think by providers, that satisfaction, and again, I use the word patient experience to specifically avoid the use of that word satisfaction, and or patient happiness are equivalent. So experience is not equivalent to satisfaction or happiness. A great experience of care means that a patient has been treated with respect, that they've been treated in a collaborative way, you know, by their medical professionals, and that they've been given absolutely state-of-the-art medical advice. It doesn't mean that the patient is necessarily happy, and it certainly doesn't mean that the provider has provided a medical recommendation that was intended just to induce happiness. That's actually a little bit paradoxical, and you know, in that way, a happy patient or a satisfied patient that has been provided bad medical advice has been provided bad care.
That's an interesting point. Andy Falk, please.
Well, you know, when you talk about patient satisfaction in those terms, I think that the medical professionals are thinking of somebody who's there for legitimate purposes, right. Somebody that's actually there because they have pain or or an injury that's being treated or whatnot. I think it's important to remember that many of these individuals that were drawn to Dr. Bovey were there for one purpose, and that was to obtain drugs to deal with their addiction. And they were lying to the doctor about symptoms of pain and things of that nature. And the only thing that was going to make those folks satisfied was a prescription for opiate medications.
With that, let's take our final break. We've got a caller on the line from Cameron. Neil, hold tight. We'd like to hear what you have to say. We'll be back in just a bit. This is the West Side. We're talking about the Cadott Medical Center. The DEA raided that back in January, middle of January. And it kind of underscores this larger discussion about opioids and how to prescribe them and how not to prescribe them. 1-800-228-5615. We've still got plenty of discussion coming up on the West Side.
Hi, I'm Michelle Martin of NPR. Is a college degree the key to economic success or just an expensive piece of paper? Join me and member station WPR for our dynamic live conversation that will consider the meaning of a college degree. I'll be joined by Stephen Thompson of NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour, radio host Charlie Sykes, illustrator Linda Barry, and current students and graduates. Who Needs College happens on March 7th at 7 p.m. Tickets available at nprpresents.org.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio is provided by the John W. and Lenore L. Landry Endowment Fund, supporting educational and informational programming like The Larry Mueller Show, in the spirit of the outreach mission of the University of Wisconsin. Support also comes from the Chippewa Valley Cultural Association, presenting Route 66, a rolling classic with a 50s-flavored soundtrack, Wednesday at 7:30 at the Heidi Center for the Arts in Chippewa Falls, cvca.net.
I'm Rich Kramer. You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. We're wrapping up a discussion about a DEA raid on a clinic in Cadott that was, according to some, a pill mill or giving out too many prescription narcotics like OxyContin or oxycodone. Others saw it as a life-saving medical practice with a doctor who actually cared and helped them with the treat their pain. Turns out the whole discussion is a lot more complicated than any of that you could ever imagine. Right now, joining us on the phone is Neil and Cameron. I want to remind our listeners that also joining me is Dr. Alaa Abdel Saeed of the he's the medical director at the University of Wisconsin Pain Clinic in Madison. He joins us from our studios at Vilas Hall. Dr. Brendan Parkhurst is the medical director of patient experience at the Marshfield Clinic, joins us by the phone, and Andy Falk is in the studio with me today. He is a sergeant with the Eau Claire Police Department and is a supervisor with the West Central Drug Task Force. 800-228-5615. Neil, are you still there?
Yes, sir.
Neil, what's on your mind?
Well, good morning, gentlemen. Ironically, I am just on my way home from a drug test at the Marshfield Clinic up here in Rice Lake to confirm that I am taking my drugs. Which is completely opposite of my former previous professional career, where they tested me to make sure I was not taking drugs. So this is kind of an odd thing for me. But
gotcha.
So that's one way I see Marshfield Clinic of at least dealing with opioid abuse is through people selling drugs, I guess, on the side or whatever. But my point is I'm really concerned about the push against opioids, and certainly there are people that are abusing them, but like Chuck and myself, I've gone through numerous back surgeries and stuff, that there are certain days that I absolutely must have these to function. Some days, some nights, more likely at night when I'm trying to sleep, to deal with the pain. There's also many days that I don't take it at all. I don't need them. I have learned, actually there was a gentleman in Eau Claire, his name was Cal Robinson. He's no longer with the clinic down there, but he had a great way of, dealing with or talking to patients about dealing with pain. Your pain is always going to be there, and how do you deal with it? And that is a multifaceted approach that's really important. I mean, I know that I'm always going to be in some level of pain, but those days, there are days that I rely and really need that medication, And what really concerns me is if this gets to be, where it's getting harder and harder and harder to get medication that a person needs, are you going to drive people, as myself, for example, underground, so to speak? Am I, if I couldn't get this anymore, there are days that I need this, would I go look at the black market? Or would I try and figure out, I'm sure there are going to be people out there and try and figure out how to make painkillers in their garage,
Sure.
So that's a real concern of mine, is are we going to drive good law-abiding citizens to be not law-abiding, so to speak, because they can no longer get the medication that they truly need. And I realize there's people out there that abuse it.
Sure.
And I would question, what is the percentage of abuse versus the percentage of people that need it?
A lot of great questions there. Thanks so much, Neil. Dr. Al, I want to go to you. First of all, my question is, is there any reason to prescribe? I mean, are we trying to get away from prescribing opioids at all, or are some patients still being prescribed them at your pain clinic?
So thank you, and it's a very good question. I'm really glad this comment came to our show today, because if everybody reads the guidelines doesn't say, no opioids. So we need to make it clear. The guidelines are in support, prescribe opioids if needed in certain regimens, and make sure you monitor opioids. So there are some patients that will continue to need opioids. That's why we're trying to tell our providers, first try alternatives and then try the multidisciplinary approach. And then see if the patient will need to have opioids, then there should be some evaluation for the risk of addiction. Because if the patient maybe have addiction risk or alcohol addiction risk, then probably he will be addicted to opioids. So after we do this evaluation, then we again set goals and doses and how we're going to start opioids and monitor. So it's very clear that we shouldn't go to zero opioids, because some patients will continue to need opioids. But again, very calculated doses, very well monitored. And again, for patient that will need it, as patient who has multiple back surgeries or patient who had severe burns, our patients in palliative care. So these are groups of patients that might continue to need certain doses of opioids.
And what about the, and I'll go to Dr. Parkhurst now, what about the fear that because of the higher control that you're putting over, because I understand part of your job at the Marshfield Clinic is to make sure that the doctors and the patients are using medication correctly. Is there fear among providers that if they prescribe this, or if they cease prescribing, I should say, that they'll drive people underground?
Yeah, I absolutely think that there is some fear in that. But again, I think it's important to point out, and I think Dr. Al was just pointing it out very well, that this really is not about no opioids. It's about trying to address pain in the safest, most productive way possible, and in a collaborative way. And so, to Neil, I believe that was your name. I apologize if I got that wrong. To that point, we're committed to working with our patients to reduce their pain, to reduce their suffering, in a safe way and in a controlled way, and in the best way possible. And so, to that end, you're never going to need to be, forced, underground. Folks who are going to look to go underground for pain medications probably have some form of addiction that they're not realizing and that is not being properly addressed by their current medical providers or by the current medical establishment.
Sure, I hear you. Now, we're getting close to the top of the hour, and I wanted to go to both the doctors. I'll start with you, Dr. Parkhurst. What are some of the new ways to treat pain aside from opioids? I mean, we've heard about physical therapy. We've heard about lidocaine patches. Is there anything new that's happening at Marshfield Clinic?
So there are all sorts of medicines, but I think that the real key to more recent developments in treatment of pain Dr. Al referenced through integrative medicine, through mindfulness techniques. Neil mentioned Cal Robinson, who was a pain psychologist at Marshfield Clinic here in the Eau Claire area for several years. That's really where I think a lot of the innovation recently is at, is trying to help patients be more mindful to recognize that pain, like everything else that we experience, is going to fluctuate up and down, and a bad episode of pain is going to go away just like every other thing, you know, that we experience in our mind. And so mindfulness training and the use of integrative medicine to really reduce pain, I think, is the big key.
With that, I wish we had more time, but that wraps up the hour. I want to thank my guests for their fantastic discussion. Also, thanks to the folks who called in. That was great. Dr. Alaa Abdel Saeed is the medical director of the University of Wisconsin Pain Clinic in Madison. Thank you. Dr. Brendan Parkhurst is the medical director of patient experience at Marshfield Clinic. Thank you. Andy Falk is a sergeant with the Eau Claire Police Department and a supervisor with the West Central Drug Task Force. Thank you. Also, thanks to Team Westside, including Mort Cypress, Henry Lippold, Allison Secord, Debbie Brown, and Dean Collenbeck. Let me be the first of our WPR regional programs to say welcome to Kate Sprenger. She is our new volunteer and events coordinator for the Eau Claire Bureau. Also, I want to say thank you to Debbie, who leaves us at WPR this week. It's been great working with you, and good luck with retirement. I'm Rich Kramer. Have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next Monday morning.